This week's episode of War Rocket Ajax is brought to you by Loot Crate. Head over to lootcrate.com/warrocketajax and use the coupon code WarRocketAjax to get $3 off a new subscription.
Clytus, I'm bored. What plaything can you offer me today?
That's War Rocket Ajax to bring back his body.
And welcome to War Rocket Ajax. This is the internet's most North Carolinian comic book and pop culture podcast, and we are your hosts. I am Durham, North Carolina's Chris Sims, and with me as always is Asheville, North Carolina's Matt Wilson. Matt, how are you doing?
What's the state greeting of North Carolina? Y'all want some barbecue?
Y'all want something to eat?
But that's right. Two hosts who, when we first started, did not live in North Carolina, and now do.
Neither one of us did. That's neither right. One of us lived in North Carolina.
What? How times change. Chris, I'm sure we'll be hearing about your move, which happened yesterday, as of this recording. very soon, once we get to Checks and Recs. Because your move happened yesterday, we're going to be making this a special episode where we're going to be taking listener questions. We haven't done one of those in a while, and it seemed like a good opportunity to dig into the question bag. So I put out the call for questions on Twitter. We've got a whole bunch of questions on Tumblr that we can grab up and answer. So we're going to be doing that a little later in the episode. But first, Chris, we've got some business to take care of, as we always do. Let's talk first about Patreon a little bit.
Are we about to talk about the people who go to patreon.com/warrocketajax and they kick in a couple of bucks every month to help us pay those gimmicks they keep sending in the mail called bills, specifically helping me cover my rent increase?
That is totally true. Those are the people who do that. We don't have any new names to read of any new Patreon supporters, but we have gotten a few messages from our Patreon supporters, both in favor of and against us ranking Holy Terror on the Every Story Ever list. That's a question we posed in our last Every Story Ever special, which is something that is made possible by our supporters on Patreon. And if you are a Patreon supporter, I mean, if you're a Patreon supporter or not, you can chime in about whether you want us to rank Holy Terror on the Every Story Ever list. But we've gotten a few responses from our Patreon supporters about that. Patreon supporters ensure that those Every Story Ever specials happen. They get bonus audio, stuff that you do not get in the regular episodes of War Rocket Ajax, either stuff that is cut out, the outtakes from a particular episode, or something that just made us go over time, or sometimes we'll just sit down and record some bonus audio, 30 minutes, 45 minutes of bonus audio strictly for our Patreon supporters. We've been talking about adding another tier on Patreon to make it so that we're going to do snack situation specials monthly. That is something we have gotten very positive response to. So that is something that we may be doing in the near future. I may be adding that Patreon tier. Art is part of the Patreon spectrum of things that supporters get. Ad-free episodes of the show. So if you would like to help us out, you can go to patreon.com/warrocketajax and kick in a few bucks to make those special things happen, get some cool stuff of your own, and just help us make this show every single week for you, plus an extra Every Story Ever special every single month.
I honestly thought for a second that when you said we'd had a lot of responses, I literally forgot we had talked about ranking Holy Terror. I thought you were going to say we got a lot of responses to our Stone Cold Steve Austin impressions last week, because we did get two emails about it.
And we got some Twitter response to it as well. None of it overtly negative. Some of it confused.
Well, the guy who said that our Australian accents were a war crime said that he preferred our Australian accents to our Stone Cold impressions.
I didn't get that email. That must have gone just to you, which is fine with
it
me.
It was my favorite reaction.
I gotta say, I'm a little hurt by it. All right, Chris. Let's do some Checks and Recs.
Let's do it.
Chris, I'm sure you have something to check in with because you're recording from an entirely different place this week.
Yes, I'm recording from my new office here in the state of North Carolina. Matt, let me ask you a question. What is the state motto of North Carolina? You're from here, so I assume you know.
I learned it in middle school. I think I learned it in elementary school, probably. It's esse quam videre, which is Latin for to be rather than to seem.
Well, that's dumb, and I hate it.
Why do you hate that?
Well, because South Carolina's state motto is while I breathe, I hope, which is rad.
Well, what's wrong with being rather than seeming?
Because it's not inspirational. Listen, I have never felt more nostalgia for South Carolina than the moment I crossed the border and knew this is where I live now. So yeah, as Matt alluded to earlier in the show, I moved. I moved to North Carolina. I live in Durham now. I have a new apartment that's really cool. And one of the cool things they do is that every maybe Thursday and Friday, I know they do it every Thursday, they just bring a food truck out. Like apartment management contacts a food truck and tells them to come over. So I can just wander out before we do Ajax and go see what food truck's cooking up out in the parking lot. That's awesome. It's my second day as a North Carolinian, unofficially. I don't have a new driver's license yet. But I filled out the change of address forms, and the lease is in my name. So if we seem a little more tired this week, if we seem a little more exhausted, it's because I recently packed up all of my possessions and then paid someone a considerable amount of money to move them for me.
That's a good reason. I have no excuse. I'm just tired this week. I've had a busy few weeks. That's all I can say. So how was the experience of moving, Chris? Because we have talked on the show. You've asked me for advice about getting through the moving experience. How do you think you got through it?
I absolutely took your advice. Like there's just stuff I'm not worrying about till next week. I think we did okay. I literally had to take a day off of work to just do nothing but pack, to put like a 12-hour shift in unpacking on Tuesday. But other than that, like, you know, when we got here, one of the, like, maybe the best thing about the move, like the thing that went absolutely according to plan, was just as soon as we got here, I brought up the modem and plugged it in, and we had Wi-Fi like instantly before we had furniture. Also, listen, if you've never hired movers, if you're like, oh, it's really expensive to like actually hire movers and have them move your stuff, just do it. It's so worth it. It's that expensive because it's absolutely worth it. Two very nice, extremely strong young men moved all of my stuff. And when I say all of my stuff, like Aiden and I both felt bad about like watching people do work while we stood around. So I helped. I brought a lot of stuff upstairs. But you know, they brought the furniture. Like, one dude carried my couch out of a truck, and this dude was not, like, a large man. He was just a very strong man. We literally, over the course of the actual move, went from being like, I wish it wasn't so expensive, to, like, oh, we're going to give them extra money and buy them pizza at the end of the night because they're nice and professional and knew how to take apart my bed and put it back together.
In all my many moves, I have hired movers 1.5 times. And I think I will probably do it again because not only do movers like amaze you constantly by being able to make it look easy to do things that are demonstrably incredibly difficult, like move a couch upstairs. They also do this amazing thing where they take stuff that you were absolutely certain is going to break, like pieces of furniture. And they wrap it in protective material, and then it arrives, and it's not broken at all, and you're shocked.
We had one thing break, and it was our fault. We had a box of, there was a tea set in there, some ceramic stuff, and the bottom of the box split. One of the guys was carrying it and the other guy was in the truck, and like the other guy jumped out of the truck to help him. And so the only thing that broke was like a creamer like a ceramic creamer that literally just split right down the middle. So if we want to put it back together, we can. Considering the amount of breakable stuff we have, it's amazing. Obviously, like the big thing was the books for us. You know, I very like look. Even though I sold most of them, I didn't sell most of them. I sold a good chunk of them. Even with all I sold, so many boxes of books. Like I'm unpacking now, and this office is just like there's still piles of books on the shelf. The first thing I got out the Kirby books and the Batman books first, so those are done at least. But yeah, like I really need to not have this many books. It's too many.
That is everyone's conclusion, or at least it's been my conclusion every time I've moved. Why do I have so many goddamn books?
The actual move wasn't bad, and I'm really looking forward to, you know, I already like living here. I was telling you before we started recording that we ordered Indian food for lunch, which is a thing that I could not do in my hometown. The only delivery in my hometown was pizza, chain pizza. And there was not even an Indian restaurant in town. So the fact that I can just, like, call someone and then 45 minutes later I have samosas is great to me. So, and I'm really looking forward. Like, obviously we've just been kind of cooped up in the apartment, but tomorrow's my birthday. As we're recording, when you hear this, I will be 34. But I'm just looking forward to kind of getting out and having a good time on my birthday in a new hometown. Like, I'm really excited about it.
Yeah, I think that's a cool thing to do on her birthday, is go explore.
Yeah. Matt, what is your check this week?
I don't have anything huge to check in with. I did announce on Twitter that at the time of the announcement, I was 6,000 words away from being finished with a book. That has come down to about 4,000 words, maybe a little more. I have a chapter and an epilogue to write, which... feels like it feels like I've been writing this book forever. It's only been a few months, but it feels like it has been an eternity. Partially because I've been describing someone's 105-6 years of life in the pages of it. So it's been quite a journey writing all of this, but I'm ending up being really proud of it. It's coming together in a way that even I kind of didn't expect at the beginning. So I'm pretty pleased with it. There's a cover now that I have seen a rough draft of that I think looks very cool. So this thing's really happening. There's really going to be a book next year. So I will let everybody know when the first draft is complete. I'm hoping to have it finished by the end of August. It may be early-ish in September. But either way, this book's going to be finished, come hell or high water. All right, Chris, recommendation time. What do you have to recommend?
I'm going to recommend the Olympics, Matt. I fucking love the Olympics. Did you know that?
I have seen your excitement about the Olympics and Aiden's excitement about the Olympics in various locations.
I mean, look, you've been on this show... Like this is the third Olympics that we've been on this show together for.
Oh, that makes me feel a little sick.
It might be the fourth Olympics we've been on this show together for.
If you include the Winter Olympics.
Yeah.
That makes me feel a little sick to my stomach. Oh.
Vancouver, London, Beijing, Sochi. It probably wasn't London or Beijing. You probably weren't around for Beijing, right? That was before this podcast existed.
That was 08. Yeah, that would be before that. Just before.
Yeah, but I love the Olympics. Generally speaking, I am not a sports fan. And I feel like a lot of that is because the sports that I like a lot are not like the popular televised sports. With the exception, of course, of the king of sports, which is pro wrestling. I'm a huge sports fan when it comes to pro wrestling. In the Olympics, like the events that I've been like really super into, obviously gymnastics. Gymnastics is always so amazing and so impressive. Lori Hernandez is my favorite because she looks like she looks like Tinkerbell. She has huge eyes.
Yeah, those really big eyes. Yeah,
and she said, "I've got this." Before she did her balance beam, it was so great. So I like gymnastics. But the thing I got into this year that I'd never been into before is rugby. Rugby sevens are fantastic. Like, I am not, like, I like sports documentaries, as you know. You've gotten me a couple for my presence in the past.
That's right.
My presence. I don't think it's the way you're supposed to say that. You've gotten them for me as presents.
Uh-huh.
I don't enjoy, like, watching a football game. It seems slow to me. It seems like it's, you know, like, the rules seem a little complicated. Like, I'm not, just not really into it, which is weird, again, considering downset fight, but whatever. But rugby, I get immediately, and it also looks like the first thing that happened in women's rugby sevens when it was, I think it was USA versus maybe Brazil, or no, it was Australia, USA versus Australia. Like, the first thing that happened was someone got a concussion because someone just got tackled with a headbutt thrown in. And again, I don't want to see anyone get hurt. And I obviously don't want to see anyone get a concussion, but it is a hard-hitting sport, and I really, really like it. So I have been super excited about the women's rugby sevens, and we watched the men's finals today with Fiji winning their first Olympic medal ever, and it being a gold medal in rugby against the UK. Like, just absolutely fantastic. I am such I am not a sports fan. I am an Olympics diehard. Absolutely love it. All the stories are just there. Like, you just need somebody to tell you. Like Ginny Thrasher, who got our first gold medal for the United States of America in shooting the 10-meter air rifle event. Like, her being, like just not supposed to have medaled. Like, not supposed to have been in the top-ranked competitors. Like, there's a gymnast, his nickname is King Kohei. And we ended up watching, like, a whole thing on him because he got into gymnastics. Well, he got into gymnastics because his parents owned a gymnastics gym. But, like, the thing that he credits with, like, really inspiring him to do well at it is comics. Like, he read a gymnastics manga that was in turn written by a gold medalist from the 80s. So there's so many of these fascinating stories there, and I love seeing those. Because that's the thing I like about sports documentaries. I like these super high-level athletics, and I like the stories. And that's what you get at the Olympics. And I'll watch the gold medal game for just about anything. Except, like, golf, I don't think I will ever, like, really enjoy. Sailing? Like, any of the sailing events, I just don't understand. Like, I just don't get them. I was
the ones that I know them. I will not watch are, I watch, like, rowing.
Rowing, I understand.
Rowing, I get. Sailing, I will not do. Another one that I will not do is anytime there's an equestrian event, I cannot connect.
They should give the medal to the horse. Does the horse get a medal?
You're right. They should.
I literally asked Aiden when we were watching one of the sailing events, because, like, you can watch it and you can tell, like, they are busting their asses out there. Like, they're all, like, slipping under the sails and turning, and they got one hand on the rudder, and it, like, looks very impressive. But I'm watching it, and all I can think is, what do they do if it's not windy that day? Like, and maybe I'm dumb, but I literally don't know that. I literally don't know what the sailing Olympics do when it's windy.
Well, I guess everybody's on an equal playing field then, at least.
Olympics, that's my rec. Go watch some. And if you, like, if there's, like, replays available, go watch some of those women's rugby sevens games. They were amazing. They were fantastic. Matt, what's your rec this week?
Since we're talking about things with an international flair, there's been, I don't know, I feel like there's been kind of an international feel to a lot of the stuff that I've been watching or sort of putting into my head lately, because there's the Olympics, there's the Cruiserweight Classic, which has 32 competitors from, what, 16 countries?
It's kind of the Olympics of Cruiserweight wrestling.
That's right. Just like Lucha Underground and stuff like that really got me thinking about learning a language, which is not something I have really done in my life. I've grabbed bits and pieces of other languages, but I've never actually like focused on learning a language. Like in college, my foreign language credit, I took Latin. So I didn't actually learn like a living language that people speak. So I kind of got thinking like, well, maybe there's a way that I can learn another language in the same way that like I sit down and play Words with Friends for 15 minutes, or that I used to waste an inordinate amount of time on Marvel Puzzle Quest. And turns out there is. This sounds weirdly like an ad for Duolingo, but it's not. It's just something that I've been occupying some of my time with lately. I downloaded the app Duolingo and started the Spanish course. It's all free. And you basically learn Spanish vocabulary and learn, you know, how to put together kind of basic sentences. I mean, there are other languages on there too. There's like Welsh and Irish, if you want to get those kind of niche languages. But there's also Russian, Italian is on there. I don't remember if there's German or not. There's French, I know for sure. But I decided to go with Spanish. And so just like, you know, for 20 minutes a day for the past 5 or 6 days, I've just been sitting down and basically playing this like a game and learning another language as I go, which has been pretty neat. And if anybody out there kind of wants to do the same thing, has been thinking about like, I would really love to learn another language, but I don't want to get through like the intensity of a class or do it in a class setting. I want to do it in kind of like a gamey way. Then Duolingo kind of does that. And I've been having fun with it. Like I can just kind of play it as a game and I'm learning stuff as I go. So that's what I've been up to. That's something I've been doing. And I think it's a cool thing that other people might like to use as well. All right, Chris. Those are our recommendations. Let's talk about some of the comics that came out this week.
Let's do it.
So the big book of the week that I think we are expected to talk about is All-Star Batman number 1, the new Scott Snyder written Batman series with a rotating group of artists on this one. And I think in this arc, it was John Romita Jr., And it was a pretty interesting take. Another Batman image that I don't think we really expected to see, much like Dirt Bike Batman. We got Chainsaw Batman this time.
Yeah, we got fucking Chainsaw Batman. Like, I'm not going to lie. Like, I'll be honest with you. I do talk to Scott Snyder on a pretty regular basis. And I've been talking to him about this issue for a while. And so I knew Chainsaw Batman was coming. And I still, like, flipped out. When Chainsaw Batman showed up, like, who is it? Is it Black Tarantula, Black Spider, Black Tarantula, who is like clowning on Batman for not carrying a gun and telling him that he could have taken care of this if he didn't just rely on his trinkets? And the next thing is Batman standing over him with a chainsaw going, I'm good.
Yeah. Black Spider. Black Tarantula Black Spider. Is a Marvel character. Yeah.
That's right. Johnny LaMonica, formerly dead, Black Spider. The thing that really gets me about this, and the thing that I think is interesting and refreshing about, you know, All-Star Batman, is that it's a really quippy Batman. Like, it's a really talky, chatty, kind of jokey Batman. And I think that's something that comes with the name All-Star Batman, right? Because this, you know, this is the first All-Star Batman, but there was a previous book that you may have heard of called All-Star Batman and Robin the Boy Wonder, which is mainly known for having Batman's dialogue. I think it's safe to say, right?
I think that is more than safe to say.
Yeah, and like I kind of like the idea that for Batman, the word All-Star means, oh, Batman's a shit talker. Like Batman's gonna run his mouth on some fools.
Well, the one person that he absolutely gets real, like almost like Spider-Man level quippy with, is Killer Moth. Mm-hmm. Like it ends up not quite being Spider-Man because it's a little more, I don't know, intense than a Spider-Man quip. But he gets really intense with the kind of stuff he says to Killer Moth. I think a lot of like his kind of openness and talkativeness comes from the fact that the people we see him talk to in this issue are not just like criminals he's interrogating or like somebody he's trying to necessarily intimidate. It's Jim Gordon, which, I mean, we see him talk to a lot, and sometimes he's very not talkative with Jim Gordon, but they're friends. There's no reason why they shouldn't be talkative. And Two-Face. I feel like this issue sort of opens up the idea that Batman and Two-Face have a very interesting relationship that isn't necessarily just adversarial.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of dealing with that friend who you know it's going to do something that makes you mad, and you're trying to prevent that. And that's kind of how Batman is with Harvey. And then Harvey fucks him over. And yeah, basically
of course he does.
Pulls a... Yeah, because... And pulls like a, it's a mad world on him.
Yeah, well, he pulls like... Look, this is the thing we haven't talked about. But All-Star Batman's first arc is going to be Scott Snyder and John Romita Jr. doing a story about Batman driving a fucking 18-wheeler with Two-Face chained up in the back.
While he's on the run from everybody who wants to kill him so they can get money, they can get a payoff.
Yeah, so they can get a payoff and so that, like, everyone's secrets won't be exposed.
Right.
Including Batman's, apparently. There's an It's a Mad World aspect of it. There's a Smokey and the Bandit aspect of it. There's a Defiant Ones aspect of it. There's kind of a Cannonball Run aspect of it, but also Gentleman Ghost is there.
Yeah, fuck yeah. The Gentleman Ghost appears in that on that last page. And that was the icing. That was the icing.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Also, there's the Alfred thing, which is a weird twist.
Yeah. I mean, like, we're really getting into spoilers territory if anybody hasn't read it. Like, Alfred trying to sabotage this plan so that presumably, like, Bruce Wayne's secrets won't be out there, you know, Batman's secrets, is a really interesting twist, I think. It's pretty... I'm interested to see how it's dealt with, because you never... Like, we haven't really seen Alfred work in the... Not necessarily... I guess it's adversary? He's kind of functioning as an adversary? Like, we haven't seen that since 1954, you know? And The Outsider. Yeah.
Or at least he's working on behalf of Bruce Wayne and not necessarily Batman.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
It's a really exciting debut. It's a really exciting first issue. I mean, it's hardly a debut, but it's an exciting first issue.
And then the backup, which has art by Declan Shelby, which looks fantastic, is almost certainly leading up to the debut of a new Crazy Quilt. Which is very exciting. So yeah, we're on board. We're on board with All-Star Batman.
Oh, it's like it's such an us book.
Yes.
Like, hey, Chris, what do you want in the comics? I don't know. Batman, Smokey and the Bandit, Gentleman Ghost.
Crazy Quilt. Moving on to another new number one issue from DC. That I saw some mixed reaction to online. I'm interested to see what you think of it. That is Superwoman number one, which we're also going to get into spoiler territory on, because a reveal that happens somewhere around halfway through the issue is that there is not just one Superwoman.
Mm-hmm.
There are two.
Yeah, there's Superwoman Blue and Superwoman Red.
Yep.
And Superwoman Blue has Superman powers, and Superwoman Red has electric Superman powers.
Mm-hmm.
What is happening in the Superman books right now, Matt?
The explanation of... So Lois Lane is Superman Blue, or Superwoman Blue,
mm-hmm.
and Lana Lang is Superwoman Red. And the explanation that is given for both of them having these powers is that they were both in the vicinity of New 52 Superman going supernova when he died. Mm-hmm. So they somehow got powers from that. But Lois and Lana got different powers for reasons I don't totally get. But it's partially explained because Lana is an engineer. So she deals with energy. She deals with science shit. And Lois has, you know, just flight, super strength, heat vision, all the classic Superman powers. Some of the more negative stuff I saw about this book was sort of more complaints about how Lois is depicted in this, how you know, Superwoman doesn't necessarily have characteristics that are specific to Lois Lane. And you know, by the end of the issue, she's basically incapacitated to the point where Lana is kind of left to her own devices. I don't know how that's going to turn out. I hope that there's kind of more for Lois to do, because Lois is one of my favorite characters ever. And I really did have a hope that this would be, you know, kind of a Lois Lane spotlight book. And I think it's an interesting twist that it's not that, that it's a Lois Lane, Lana Lang team book, or at least that's what it seems like. So I can sympathize with what I've seen about the depiction of Lois Lane in the book. At the same time, I did think it was a fun read for the most part. Like the fact that the two superwomen have to save Lex Luthor, who's kind of in over his head, trying to be this new Superman as he's launching this new giant aircraft carrier of his. The sort of quippiness of this issue as well. Like we talked about the quippiness of All-Star Batman. There's absolutely a quippiness to this as well that I enjoy a lot. A lot of kind of winky jokes about the size of Lex Luthor's boat.
Mm-hmm. His aircraft carrier made of aircraft carriers.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Which is pretty hilarious.
And I also enjoy the fact that, like, we basically get other characters putting these new superwomen over, or at least Lois Lane Superwoman over, in wrestling terms. Because we have that scene of, like, Steel being interviewed and saying, like, yeah, Superwoman's great. She's going to do a great job.
Yeah, like,
which I did appreciate.
I really liked this issue, and I really liked how it kind of treated the Lois Lana relationship. I mean, like, the thing that we haven't really talked about is the fact that Lois Lane dies on the last page. But
well, she gets turned to stone, which could be easily reversed. Yeah. But
a lot of people, I think, maybe again, I've been completely out of the loop this week. I've barely even been aware of what's going on at Comics Alliance outside of my articles, which are about Superman comics from the 90s. But I know that Kieran wrote a piece about this possibly being the death of New 52 Lois, and how, like, how weird that is, and how weird New 52 Lois has been. The past 5 years of Lois Lane have been a weird 5 years for Lois Lane. And if it does end up here, then that's a really weird way to end it, too. But I absolutely think that Lois Lane will be back next issue. Because if she's not, then this is just a book about Lana Lang having electric Superman powers. That's fucking nuts.
That would be bananas. New 52 Lois Lane has been an interesting grouping of characteristics. Because in the Morrison version, in the Morrison Action Comics, she was this very kind of like forceful character who made things happen and faced down her dad. But concurrently in Superman, she just had this new boyfriend who was a nothing character. And it was just like as a way to say, like, oh, she's not married to Superman anymore. She's not dating Clark. And then she kind of faded into the background until she came back to reveal Superman's identity to the world. And those being the things that Lois Lane does, that's weird.
Yeah. Yeah. Super weird. But I really liked the issue, and I thought like it's very beautiful, obviously. And you know, the Superman books are in this weird state right now where everything that's happening to them is a thing that I do not understand why it's happening. Like, did you know the Eradicator ate Krypto a couple weeks ago, Matt?
I did not know that.
Yeah, the Eradicator ate Krypto, and then Haken from Hitman showed up.
Oh, that was in Superman. Okay.
Yeah. Like, I don't understand what's happening, but like, Lois Lane and Lana Lang both being Superwomen but having different Superman powers, that's a kind of weirdness that I can really understand and kind of get behind. And as someone who is, you know, like the electric era of Superman being my current obsession, I'm all in for this. It's great. And I'm really looking forward to the next little bit of this book.
Yeah, I hope Lois returns, but
I would put aside from that. Apparently, Kieran and Katie Schenkel at Comics Alliance have a bet, and I wanted to get in on the bet, but apparently the loser has to admit they're wrong on their podcast, and I will pay any amount of, I will put any amount of money on this bet, but that is something I can't even entertain the possibility of having to do.
Who is betting that that Lois is permanently dead?
Kieran. Kieran thinks this is it for New 52 Lois, because we have another Lois now. Like, we have two Loises. And again, if this is the solution for getting rid of our spare Lois, it sure is a weird one.
Yeah, it is. It was a weird, like, kind of anticlimax for that to happen on. All right, we're going to wrap up by talking quickly about New Superman number 2. Now, we talked about the first issue of this series. Chris, I haven't actually gotten to read number 2 yet, but you say it's a continuation of the characterization of Kenan Kong that we got in the first one.
Yeah, you get a little bit more of New Batman and New Wonder Woman in this issue, who are great, and you find out a little bit about the Justice League of China that's coming around. And one of the things I like about it is that they're not, like, sweeping the Great Ten under the rug, but they have a reason for having the Justice League of China and a Chinese Superman and a Chinese Batman and a Chinese Wonder Woman. But the main attraction of this book is that Kenan Kong continues to just be, like, a little shithead, and I love him. He's such a little asshole. He's very, very fun. Again, I am really, really enjoying this book. I think I said before, I've been on the Gene Yang train for as long as that has existed, and this, it just keeps getting better. Like, I didn't know if it could get better than when Superman joined an indie wrestling league, but here we are.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting, you know, because we ragged considerably on the new Shazam, the new Captain Marvel, for him being like a shithead kid. But this proves that there could be a superhero who is a new version of another superhero who can be a shithead, and we like him.
Yeah, well,
it's all about the way it's done. It's all about the execution.
Yeah,
Chris, that's our comic segment. We're gonna answer some listener questions, but before we do, let's talk a little bit about Loot Crate.
Let's do it, man.
We've talked in previous episodes about the theme of the August Loot Crate. And if you don't know what Loot Crate is, it is a monthly subscription service where you pay less than $20 a month to get a box shipped to you monthly full of exclusive cool stuff. It's 6 to 8 items. And those items include licensed gear, apparel, collectibles, unique one-of-a-kind items, a pin, and lots more. And those things just come to you every single month. Now, we've talked about the August theme, which is anti-hero. Chris, do you want to hear about some of the stuff that's in the anti-hero box?
I would love to. I'm very curious to know what's in the anti-hero box.
Okay, so there's stuff from DC Comics.
Okay.
Which we just talked about at length. And you know, there's a movie called Suicide Squad that's about some anti-heroes, so I think it's probably tied into that. Archer is one of the things. Dark Horse Comics is another one of the things. And Kill Bill is yet another. So those are, that's what's in the regular loot crate, right? Did you know, Chris, that there is an even bigger box that you can get if you upgrade your loot crate to Loot Crate DX?
Loot Crate DX?
That's right.
Wait,
D-Generation
Matt,
X.
Matt, you told me that I need to loot crate, but break it down.
That's right.
No, you keep going. I'm just going to do the song.
Okay. Loot Crate DX is a high-caliber collection of items from your favorite pop culture franchises.
That's the breaks, boys. Yeah, that's the breaks, little man. Break it down.
Loot Crate DX! Now, we said the regular Loot Crate is less than $20 a month. Loot Crate DX is less than $50 a month. And for that less than $50 a month, you get at least $100 worth of goodies. Collectibles, apparel, goods for your home, stuff to decorate your home with. You get stuff from even more franchises. Okay, for example, in the August Antihero box, you're going to get exclusive items not just from DC Comics and those other franchises I talked about, but also from Borderlands, a video game series that we really like here on War Rocket Ajax, Marvel Comics, and two stylish wearables. So if you are looking for even more cool stuff to come to your door every month, and you don't mind paying a little more, less than 20 for the regular Loot Crate, less than 50 for the Loot Crate DX, then if you don't mind paying that little bit more, you can get, you know, something in the range of like twice as much stuff. So if you want to try out Loot Crate DX, break it down. You should absolutely give that a shot. Either way, you can get $3 off your brand new subscription by going to lootcrate.com/WarRocketAjax and using the coupon code WarRocketAjax. So less than 50? No. Less than 47? Less than 20? No. Less than 17. Go sign up for a Loot Crate account, help out War Rocket Ajax, get $3 off, and break it down.
Matt, I just have one question about all this.
I'm all ears.
Are you ready?
And if you're not down with that, I don't know what to tell you. All right, Chris, let's answer some listener questions.
Let's do it.
All right. I have put out the call for questions on Twitter, and we have gotten quite a few. So we're going to alternate between some Twitter questions and some Tumblr questions. Chris, you ready?
I am. What was that question, Matt?
Are you ready? The first question comes from Mike Pankowski. And I feel like this is a loaded question. I feel like we may disqualify this question. But I'm going to ask it anyway. Mike wants to know, what country would do better in the Olympics, Wakanda or Latveria?
Well, Latveria is going to be like everyone who competes for Latveria is going to be an LMD, right? Obviously.
I feel like Latveria is going to get instantly banned for doping.
No, what'll happen is that Dr. Doom will compete in every event himself. He is not going to delegate that task.
That's fair. That is very fair. Wakanda, I mean, I'm sure Wakanda would do fine. I don't know about the athletic makeup of Wakanda. I know about the technological makeup of Wakanda. The industrial makeup of Wakanda. But based on Black Panther's abilities, I'm sure they would do just fine.
Well, Black Panther's enhanced. He has the heart-shaped herb.
I mean, you're right. Who do you think would
do better if we just like pulled an Olympic event out of a hat? Who do you think would do better, Black Panther or Doctor Doom? I mean, traditionally speaking, it's going to be Black Panther because he's a protagonist, right?
But obviously, Doctor Doom's going to cheat. The only question is, will Doctor Doom get caught cheating?
Of course, he'll get caught cheating.
Like in a race, Dr. Doom would just teleport to the finish line, right?
Yes, yes. Here's what I'm going to do. I'm just going to Google real quick, random Olympic event.
Okay.
Okay, badminton was the first one that popped up.
I mean, I feel like that's a comic that we should write right now. Black Panther and Doctor Doom play badminton.
The problem is we have to get this thing out by, like, tomorrow.
That's fair. All right, so I don't know that that's a conclusive answer for you, Mike, but we got into it without getting into the weird racial element of the question, which I'm pleased with. The next question comes from the Seven Beer Stitch on Tumblr. And this is a question from a while ago. So try to imagine Seth Rollins' pre-injury ring gear, okay?
Okay.
Is it just me, or does Seth Rollins' ring attire make him look like the Cygnus Zodiart from Forza? If so, does that make the Authority Kamen Rider Club?
It actually does. Matt, I know you're not familiar with Kamen Rider Forza, despite my urging.
I'm vaguely familiar with it, based on what I've seen from you.
Right. Well, if you are curious about what the Cygnus Zodiart looks like, it looks like Seth Rollins' white ring gear. It looks exactly like that. I don't think that makes the Authority Kamen Rider Club. I think they would be more like Cygnus's weird after-school cult that he had in that episode.
This next question is from Barely Sushi on Twitter, Mike Donahue. Mike says, he has never really gotten Sting. What are some good WCW matches with him?
Here's why you didn't get Sting. You were not a child in the South in the late 80s and early 90s.
That's 100% true. There was a certain appeal to Crow Sting that only came from being aware of Surfer Sting.
Yeah.
Because it was such a vast difference. I'm going to make two recommendations of things to go watch.
Okay.
The first one is something I just randomly put on the 4th of July, because I thought it was appropriate. I put on the Great American Bash 1988, which is the first Great American Bash that is available on the WWE Network, because I think it was the first time the Great American Bash was a pay-per-view instead of a tour mm-hmm. around the country. There's a tag match that opens that Great American Bash between... it's between Arn Anderson and Tully Blanchard of the Four Horsemen, and Sting and Nikita Koloff, who was in the midst of a strange late 80s face run, despite being a Soviet bad guy for most of his career.
Oh, yeah, that's when he got his U.S. citizenship in kayfabe.
Yeah, yeah. Now, I was 100% convinced that Nikita Koloff was going to turn on Sting. Because that happened to Sting all the time. But if you just watch that match and listen to the crowd heat, the crowd getting hot for Sting going in the corner and doing this Stinger splash leading up to the finish of that match, you may not understand why the crowd is so into Sting or why what he's doing is exciting necessarily, but you'll get why Sting was popular or that people did it like him a lot. Because the crowd is so hot for that moment of that match. So that's one I'd recommend. And then another one I'd recommend, if you have the wherewithal to watch it, is from the very first Clash of the Champions, which is also on the WWE Network. That Clash of the Champions is basically what made Sting a star. Sting and Ric Flair go the distance in a full hour match in a cage. And it's something. Like, I don't know that it necessarily holds up to the pacing of, you know, the standards for a match now, but that's the match that made Sting a star. So that will show you why Sting was a star.
I would say my favorite match when I was a kid, because when I was a kid, I loved Sting. I think the thing that you don't hear a lot about Sting, but I know that you and I definitely believe it to be true, is that he is full on the John Cena of his era. Like, he even wrestles like John Cena. Yes. Except he does the, you know, the Hogan no-sell sometimes.
And Cena, I guess Cena has the STF.
Mm-hmm.
But the Scorpion Deathlock, Sting did have his like certain moves that were like his lead up to the end of the match moves.
Right, exactly.
The boot, the Stinger Splash, all leading into the Scorpion Deathlock.
So I loved him when I was a kid. You know, I had a beach towel. I had a rat tail for a while because of Sting when I was like 11. Don't at me about this. But my favorite match, I think it was on, from what I can tell, Beach Blast 92. And it was Sting versus Cactus Jack, who of course is Mick Foley. And that was the first match, you know, at 10 years old, where I was like, okay, I love the good guy in this match, but the bad guy in this match is like not just like a monster, but is awesome. Like, the whole reason I started watching WWF in the late 90s was because somebody told me, like, oh, hey, you know Mankind is Cactus Jack, right? And I had never really watched WWF until then. And so I was like, oh, Cactus Jack, I love him. And it was because of this match. Now, there's a lot of hard bumps in this match. So if you cringe thinking about Mick Foley these days, then maybe, you know, take this recommendation with a grain of salt. But do know that this was Foley's favorite of his own matches until one that he did a few years later with Shawn Michaels. And I think it really holds up. It's just like, it's the classic monster heel versus, you know, unstoppable babyface match. It's great. I love it. I might go watch it tonight, actually.
Another Tumblr question. This is from Moody Kittens on Tumblr. They want to know, I know you're both big Doctor Doom fans. So if Marvel approached you about writing a Doctor Doom ongoing, what would be your approach to the book?
Well, the first arc is obviously Doctor Doom versus Black Panther in badminton at the Latvian Olympic Games. God, the Latvian Olympic Games would be an amazing, amazing story.
I do think that if I did a Doctor Doom series, it would be, at least for the first couple arcs, very Latveria focused.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's rare that we actually get to see Doctor Doom as, you know, a leader to his people.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's so defined in comics by his rivalry with Reed Richards. I would love to see just like some stuff about day-to-day life in Latveria. And maybe even, you know, present some stuff from the point of view of a person who just lives in Latveria, who and how they view Doctor Doom. Yeah, I think that would be my approach. I like keep the superheroes out of it for a while and let's just focus on King Doom.
A Doctor Doom ongoing would be really tricky, I think, because Dr. Doom's a really great character, but Dr. Doom's a really great villain, which means that you want to see him almost win. But if you're going to do, like, if it has to be an ongoing series, then obviously Dr. Doom has to be the protagonist, right? Like, that's only logical.
Yeah.
So I think the question becomes, you know, how do you make Dr. Doom work as a protagonist? How do you put Dr. Doom against someone who's going to be worse enough to make you want to see Dr. Doom win, but without sacrificing what makes him Dr. Doom? It's really tough.
I feel like the way that has been pulled off in the past is to give the villain the motivation of wanting to out-hero their hero rival.
Mm-hmm.
Like to beat them at their own game. So that might be one way to do it, even though I also kind of feel like that's overdone.
Yeah.
At this point.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
I don't know if it could sustain itself for more than a miniseries. You know, like there's a really, really great miniseries called Doctor Doom and the Masters of Evil. I believe Paul Tobin wrote it. I just unpacked it, but it's out of arm's reach and I'm not getting up. I'm just going to be honest with everybody right now. It works by showing Dr. Doom through the perspective of other villains in the Marvel Universe. And it's a really, really cool idea. And it's an idea that, you know, I don't think had been done, certainly not this well up to that point. And with this being a young reader's book, like it was one of those books that was the thing that came after Marvel Adventures. You know, they did Iron Man and the Armor Wars, and they did Spider-Man and the Secret Wars one that Clevenger wrote. And it's like really, really good, and it has one of the best Doctor Doom endings I've ever read in any story, you know, period, end of sentence. But after that ending, like, that's the end of that story. Like, you can't, like, there's nowhere to go from that in terms of the character of Doctor Doom. You don't want to see his next adventure. So I don't know. Like, I think there's stuff that you could do. Like, is there, you know, there's enough with Doctor Doom. There's political stuff. There's Latveria stuff. There's time travel stuff. There's magic stuff. There's Doctor Doom versus the devil. It's just trying to figure out how to do it in a way that would work. That I think it would be really, really tough.
Yeah. Our next question, this isn't actually a question.
Okay.
But it's from our friend Ben Gully, Ferdinand to
Can I say
Twitter,
something about Ben Gully real quick?
Yes, you may.
I had been in my new apartment for literally 5 minutes. I did not have furniture. The movers were not here yet. Literally 5 minutes I had been in this apartment when Ben Gully showed up at the door with a bag of pastries. I love Ben Gully. He is amazing. Thank you, Matt, for bringing him into my life. He's the best.
Well, I'm glad you appreciate him. This statement / non-question is the Dungeon Family's Even in Darkness is a really good album. I guess this isn't a question. You know what, Ben? You're absolutely right about that. That's a fucking good, underappreciated album that everyone should listen to. Here's a real question from Dan Pensk on Twitter, D.A. Pensk. Dan wants to know, I guess this is a question for me. Matt, did you ever finish the true ending of Undertale? And have you forced Chris to listen to Megalovania? I have not forced Chris to listen to any of the music from Undertale, even though I feel like the music from Undertale is best appreciated in the context of the game. I'm fine with going and listening to it separately as a soundtrack, because that music is really good. Like, I'm kind of shocked by how good all the music in that game is, especially because apparently those are all all the music was created by the creator of the game, in addition to the game itself, which is so wild. Toby Fox is his name. Clearly, he's a really talented guy. But yes, I did get to the quote-unquote true ending of the game. I got every ending. I did the run where you kill nobody. I did the run where you kill everything in the entire world of the game. And thought that both of those endings were kind of beautifully strange and creepy and uplifting in their weird ways. And I did love that game. It's probably in the pantheon of one of my, you know, top games of the last little while. It didn't make my top five when I did my top five games recently, but it's pretty close. It's number six or seven. Next question that we have is from Mega Pandrew on Tumblr. Mega Pandrew asks, I'm a pretty big fan of strong female superheroes and want to get into Power Girl. What's a good jumping on point?
Literally just read the Jimmy Palmiotti, Justin Gray, Amanda Connor run of Power Girl. And you're set. You are set.
Jimmy Palmiotti, Justin Gray, Amanda Connor, Power Girl number one. There's your jumping on point. Our next Twitter question comes from Daniel the Historian, LOTR_Dan on Twitter. Dan wants to know if we have any thoughts on the Telltale Batman game.
I have not played it yet, but I have heard it's interesting, and I would like to play it. So those are my thoughts.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat. From what I've heard about it, it sounds interesting. The focus on Bruce Wayne and playing as Bruce Wayne sounds intriguing. But I've actually come to the conclusion that with those episodic Telltale games, I tend to prefer playing them all at once. You know, instead of you know, the monthly episode release schedule, just wait for the whole season of, I think they're usually around 6 episodes, to come out, and then just play that whole thing. Because I've done with, I like the Walking Dead game and the Fables game, I was reviewing those for Comics Alliance episode by episode. And there's nothing wrong with playing them episodically, but I feel like it's a more complete experience, and I kind of enjoy it more if I'm playing, if I play the whole thing in one go. So I will probably wait until all the episodes are out and I can just buy it all as one thing before I get around to playing it. Our next question from Tumblr is from Infinity Joe. The question is for Chris. Chris, have you read or watched JoJo's Bizarre Adventure? If you have, do you have thoughts? If you haven't, you might like it quite a bit.
I started watching JoJo's Bizarre Adventure because I have been... it's been recommended and anti-recommended to me enough that I am super intrigued by it. But it turns out that things that have subtitles need to be, you need to pay attention to them, which is weird. you can't just have them on in the background while you're reading Superman comics from the 90s, which is generally how I live my life.
That's true. But maybe you should check it out.
No, I'm not.
I mean, certainly it's been memed enough times.
I am absolutely planning on it. I just need to... Now that I'm in the new place and don't have to worry about moving anymore, I feel like maybe some time will open up so that I can experience things again.
Dan Pensk on Twitter, D.A. Pensk, who has already asked one question, but I guess he's going to get another one, asks, who would you guys want to direct a Gillen and McKelvey Young Avengers movie, and why is it Edgar Wright?
That was the first name that popped into my head, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, now that he has put that idea in my head, it's hard for me to think of anyone else. Although I'm sure there are other very capable directors who would do a fine job with the Young Avengers movie.
Who's the guy who's directing the Flash movie, who did Dope?
Rick Famuyiwa?
Yeah, I mean, that, like, he might be a really good choice. Like, there are a lot of weirdly comparable things about Young Avengers and the movie Dope, which everyone should watch after I recommended it a few weeks ago.
Yeah. But I mean, obviously Edgar Wright would be a great choice for it as well. Other directors aren't coming to mind immediately, but I feel like Edgar Wright's a pretty good suggestion.
Solid choice. Solid pick.
Outrider C on Tumblr says, this is mainly for Chris. I remember you mentioned you weren't a fan of Joe Kelly's JLA run.
Nope.
Were there any major reasons it just didn't click? I recently reread Obsidian Age, and despite some not-so-great stuff, like the Ancient League, overall I thought it was pretty good. That might just be because Kyle shines through as the hero in it, and I'm always up for a good Kyle's the best story. So quick thoughts on the Joe Kelly JLA run.
It's stupid. It sucks. And I hate it. Shout out to James Kachalka for giving me my immediate response to everything for the past 10 years. No, like that, like Golden Perfect is a flawed story, and Obsidian Age is an even more deeply flawed story. And I think the problems are that they are shooting to be Morrison, and Joe Kelly is no Grant Morrison. But, like, I think that's that sounds like a really, really harsh assessment of Joe Kelly. But when Kelly's at his best in stuff like Deadpool, in stuff like I Kill Giants, in stuff like even, you know, bits and pieces of his Spider-Man stuff, like, he's very much Joe Kelly. those JLA stories at the time to me. And again, like I have not read them in a long time, but I remember absolutely hating them and reading them every month, which apparently is a thing that I do with various eras of Justice League books. They felt like someone was writing bad Grant Morrison Justice League fanfic. Like, we talked about how Morrison doesn't leave books in, like, there's no lead into the next arc with Grant Morrison, right? Like, he'll introduce interesting ideas and interesting villains and interesting concepts, but, like, when he leaves a book, he goes out. Like, he, you know, you're, like, pity that a guy who has to come next. Kelly really felt like he was just, like, doing his best to try and top World War III and some of the other cool stories, like the Starro story with Daniel, like the Ultramarine story. Like, it felt like he liked all those comics and wanted to do stuff like them, but his versions of those stories are just bad. They're too cutesy in a lot of places. There's a bit that always sticks out to me, where the Justice League has like a little telepathic conference room that Martian Manhunter, like kind of, you know, brings everybody into this little telepathic conference room. And so they're all their self images of themselves. And Superman is like wearing like overalls and a plaid shirt and a cape. And it's like, yeah, cause he's a farmer at heart. I get it. Like, I get it. Thanks, Joe. I appreciate it. And I feel like
it sounds like we're kind of blaming Joe Kelly for having to follow Grant Morrison.
No, like, but you know what? Like, Mark Waid, I thought, did a good job. By the way, Benito texted me and told me about how I forgot half of Mark Waid's run on Justice League when we talked about it. I forgot 2 out of 5 story arcs, which was absolutely true. But Waid came on and did fine. You know, and Heaven's Ladder is a big, big story. Obsidian Age is a fucking mess, dude. Like, the Ancient League is terrible. Like, I'm sorry. Like, it's a concept that seems like it might be good, but is actually bad. It's actually very bad. It doesn't hold up. Faith? You're gonna tell me that Faith? DC Faith, not Valiant Faith, but like, you're gonna tell me Faith was readable as a character? What was the description of her powers? It was, oh, I gotta look this up. Hang on a second. You remember Faith, Matt?
I did not read that Joe Kelly run on JLA, I have to admit.
Oh, she was so bad. She eventually got bitten by vampires in that really, really bad Claremont Byrne story that we were like, oh, Claremont and Byrne, they're back together, but they're not like talking to each other while they're doing it. And there's a vampire named Crucifer, which is like Crucifix and Lucifer at the same time. So bad.
All right, here's a list of Faith's powers and abilities. Telepathy. A calming aura.
Mm-hmm.
Telekinesis. Mental blasts, flight, and teleportation.
Yeah, she has like whatever powers. She just has, you know, some powers, basically. And like, there was a weird line about her powers. I wish I could remember it, but it's like, yeah, you know, she's got the power to be our secret weapon or something. Because like, there was a mystery about her. It's the worst, dude. It's the pits.
All right, I think that effectively answers that question. Our next Twitter question comes from our friend, recent guest on the show, Randall Trang. Randy wants to know, he says, this is not a criticism, but an honest question. Would War Rocket Ajax consider covering more non-superhero comics from First Second, Scholastic OGNs, and so forth?
Yeah, sure. I'd like to. Like, I think the problem is that we read those DC books every week.
I think for the comics review segment, it's kind of built for single issue comics,
mm-hmm.
and not for OGNs, which I think require more discussion, more depth, more involvement in talking about them. I think the places where we can cover that kind of stuff more effectively is in interviews, in our guest interviews.
Oh, absolutely.
And I'm more than happy to have on, you know, somebody who does first, second graphic novel or a Scholastic OGN or something for Top Shelf on the show for an interview. And we've had those folks on before, and I'd like to get more folks like that on the show. So would we consider it? Absolutely. And I would like to have more of that in the interview segments. It might be a little tougher to do in the regular comics review segment, just because of the way that segment is built to review like the current comics of that week. Mm-hmm. But yeah, open to it, want to do it, want to have more people like that on the show for sure. Our next question from Tumblr is from AWA64, who asks, what characters would you like to cosplay as? Or, for the sake of argument, would choose if you were forced to, if you wouldn't like to cosplay as anyone? And what characters do you think the other one out of your duo would be particularly good at cosplaying as?
I've never really done cosplay. I did dress up as Archie for Halloween last year.
You did, and that was a good look.
Yeah.
I liked that costume a lot.
When I spray painted my hair orange on your porch.
You sure did.
Let's see. I would like to be in good enough shape to cosplay as any superhero. I don't want to be limited to like Kingpin and Michelangelo the Ninja Turtle.
I mean, I think you could pull off a Destro. What immediately came to mind for me as what I would think you would be particularly good at cosplaying as, and what I would like to see is you Destroing it up.
I mean, that would be fun. Now, the problem with Destro is you have to make a choice with Destro. You either get a mask, like the Destro mask, or you just paint your head silver. And there are advantages and disadvantages to both of those, I think.
Yeah, if you paint your head silver, then your hair is still going to be visible.
No, just shave your head.
So, I mean, you really got to commit to that.
Yes.
There are definitely disadvantages. I think we could be a good pair as Destro and Cobra Commander, to be honest.
That would be pretty fantastic. What level of the Patreon is that?
I don't know. Enough for us to buy those costumes and make them look good.
You know what would be a pretty good...
I think I would have to be, hooded. I think I'd have to be hooded Cobra Commander, not metal-face Cobra Commander. Although, maybe there's a way to make that metal face costume work. I'm sure somebody's done it.
No, well, surely I've told the story about how I was in the elevator with metal face Cobra Commander a couple Heroes Cons ago, right?
Maybe you have, but I'm sure our listeners would love to hear it again if you've already told it on the show.
Well, I was going into the hotel. This was during Heroes Con, and I realized that maybe 20 yards in front of me, heading for the same elevator, was Cobra Commander, and I think the Baroness too. Full costume. And again, this is June in North Carolina. My man has on a full action figure accurate Cobra Commander suit and mirror face helmet. And he rolls up into the elevator, and I'm in the elevator with him because as soon as I saw him ahead of me, I was like, I gotta speed it up because I am not missing the chance to be in the elevator with Cobra Commander. And so he's standing there, in full costume. And I just kind of turn and go, you know, I didn't expect to share an elevator with Cobra Commander today. And he goes, life is full of surprises. In the elevator. Not on the con floor. My man stayed in character up to the room. Metal Face Cobra Commander looks good in person. I think Metal Face Cobra Commander looks better as cosplay than Hooded Cobra Commander any day of the week.
All right, well then maybe if we ever do it, maybe I'll have to do Metal Face.
Here's a good couples costume for us, Matt, you and me. You would have to work out and I would have to grow a beard. But I think we'd be a pretty good Archer and Armstrong if we really dedicated ourselves to it.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think it would be that hard for me to get to Archer. I'm a little more broad-shouldered than I was a couple years ago. I'm doing a little more working out than I used to.
All right.
So I don't know that it would be that hard to pull off.
According to my phone, yesterday was the first time I kind of realized, like, oh, hey, doing all these squats at MMA class really worked out. Because yesterday I climbed up 80 flights of stairs. It seems.
Yeah, you do that when you're moving. Yes. If you don't hire movers, you do even more. The next question from Twitter is from Not Mandalorian, one of the several accounts created specifically because of something we said on the show. They ask, any chance on panel president continuing into 2017? Love the segment even more than the excellent Every Story Ever segment.
I mean, it all depends. We'll see what happens in January.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a strong possibility.
I will say panel president might be like in the top three hottest segments in podcasting right now.
No kidding. We're going to stick with Twitter for the next couple questions. Okay, so this is an exchange on Twitter that I'm gonna put out there to you, Chris. Doubting_Tom first asked, Cobra is trying to take over the world at the Olympics. What's their plan and how do the Joes stop them? Okay. Then Mark Quill answered him, or part of the question about how the Joes stop them, by saying they send in Katie Ledecky. Gold medal swimmer Katie Ledecky. Then Doubting_Tom replied to that, oh shit, what's Katie Ledecky's G.I. Joe code name?
Okay. So let's take these questions as they come. First, they're going to seal the Olympic torch, right? Obviously. Like,
after it's lit?
Yes.
Or are they going to, during the opening ceremony, steal the torch that lights the big
torch? I mean the big one. They're going to steal the big one. If it's cartoon, Cobra Commander, he's stealing the Olympic torch. If it's Larry Hama Comics Cobra Commander, then they're going to send in, like bats to win all the Olympics and bankrupt every country by cornering the market on gold. That's a Larry Hama plot.
Yeah, I think there's got to be something in there about them stealing all the medals.
Yeah.
And melting them down into their own devices.
So I absolutely think one of those is the thing. I just think stealing the torch makes for a great visual.
Yeah. It's a great cartoon visual, yeah, for sure.
For sure. I do think Katie Ledecky is a great pick, especially because, she can't, like, she's out of her element if she can't, like, you know, you can't bring the torch to the pool. Because, I mean, for one thing, the water will put it out. For another thing, that diving pool might just, like, set that shit on fire even more. We do not know what's in the diving pool.
The green diving pool?
Yeah, that thing. Yeesh, yikes. Katie Ledecky's code name. I don't...
If there was not already a Joe named Freestyle, she would absolutely be Freestyle.
Freestyle's a really good code name, Matt. I don't think there is one. I don't think there's Freestyle.
There is a Joe name. I looked it up already.
There's a Joe named Freestyle?
There's a fighter pilot Joe named Freestyle.
That sounds fake. Oh, this sounds like it might be like from Sigma 6 or something.
I think it is a later addition to the Joes.
Let's see. Because like I'm trying to think of like the watery Joes. You know, we got Wetsuit, Deep Six, Cutter, Deep Dive. No, I'm just making things up. Davy Jones, Diving Bell, Water Pressure, Bat Time. These are all terrible Joes. Someone let me put these Joes in a comic book. No, I think we got to reclaim freestyle and give it to Katie Ledecky.
I mean, it is the best possible name to give her, yeah. I feel like. Because didn't she win all her medals in freestyle events?
She won the relay, but I think that was freestyle as well. Which was amazing.
Because, like, the only, like, you can't name her breaststroke.
No, that's...
You can't name her butterfly.
Yeah.
Backstroke sounds weird.
Yeah.
She's got to be freestyle. Like, I don't know what else she could be.
I'm trying to think, is there, like, anything, like, any swimming terms? We don't know any swimming terms, right?
Not really.
What's it called when you, like, do that, like, flip and push off of the wall when you're, like, doing a relay?
I think that's just called a turn.
A turn? Okay, so that's not gonna
work. You're in the turn.
I don't know, I think you're right. I think we're reclaiming freestyle. Yeah. I think she's the new freestyle.
It's all I can really think of. That would be really good.
Do we want to put in, like, any other Olympic athletes? Like, are we going to put, like, Serena Williams in there? Or who else do we have? Ginny Thrasher? Ginny Thrasher is, like, already a G.I. Joe. Her name's Ginny Thrasher, and she's good at guns.
Yeah, yeah. Like, she's already got her name. Yeah,
she actually, look, Katie Ledecky's great and all, but, like, Ginny Thrasher might be the one who takes out Cobra Commander in the story.
He
just has to get within 10 meters.
And Serena Williams can be, you know, forehand. Or backhand, I don't know.
I think Serena Williams' G.I. Joe code name is Serena Williams.
Yeah, yeah, fair enough. We're going to get a couple more Twitter questions in. This one is from our pal Mike Sterling on Twitter. Mike asks, surely there could be a good Metalmen movie, right? Why hasn't this happened? Who is responsible?
I absolutely think there could be a good Metalmen movie.
Anything's possible, Mike. Anything is possible. The elements, pun intended, ugh, of a good Metalmen movie are there, but whether or not I feel like there's the ability or the drive to make a good Metalmen movie, that I don't know. I just don't know.
In a just and kind world, Metalmen would be like DC's answer to Big Hero 6, I think. Like, because...
So you want it to be animated?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's basically going to be animated anyway, Matt.
Right.
One of those characters is liquid at room temperature, or haven't you heard?
Yeah. I'm aware, yes.
Because that's the good thing about Metalmen, right? Like, Metalmen and Metamorpho are both in that weird vein of comics where they're kind of like... They're kind of educational, but in this real bullshit sort of way. Like, this bullshit Robert Kaniger sort of way.
All right, I think this one's going to have to be our last question. We got several more, and I apologize to folks who asked questions that we didn't get to. But this one is from Greg Thalen on Twitter. Greg wants to know, which actress would you guys pick to play Squirrel Girl?
Barb from Stranger Things makes a really convincing argument in that she looks a lot like Squirrel Girl.
Yeah, I think she would be good. I'm all in for Erica Henderson's pick, who is Mae Whitman.
Mae Whitman would also be good. And Erica is a good person to make that choice, I think.
And I also saw this week that Lauren Lapkus was asking about playing Squirrel Girl on her Twitter. And I think even though she's maybe a little beyond the age range, I think she could pull it off, and I think Lauren Lapkus would do a great job. I think Lauren Lapkus would be a great pre-solo series Squirrel Girl,
mm-hmm.
like a great Great Lakes Avengers Squirrel Girl, and Mae Whitman would be a great Unbeatable Squirrel Girl.
I have also heard Kate Micucci her name thrown around would also be pretty good.
Yeah, I feel like Kate Micucci and Lauren Lapkus have a lot of the same qualities that would make them good Squirrel Girls. Yeah.
I mean, I feel like the world is ready for a 5'2", 36-year-old Squirrel Girl.
That's right. Yes, exactly. And that's going to do it, I think, for our listener questions. Thank you to everybody who sent in questions. We appreciate it. And again, sorry that we couldn't get to all of them. Maybe we'll do another question special not too far in the distant future. If you would like to send us a question on Tumblr, because quite a few of the questions that we answered this episode came from Tumblr, you can do so by going to our Tumblr, which is warrocketpodcast.tumblr.com. You can also send us questions by email, which is, our email address is warrocketpodcast@gmail.com. That is also where you can send panel president lists, every story ever lists. If you just have a comment that you want to send us, you can email it to us. If you want to sponsor the show, you can let us know by emailing us, and so on and so forth. Be sure to check out our website, which is warrocketajax.com. That's where you can stream the show, download the show, read show notes, and leave comments. Check us out on iTunes. If you go to iTunes and you search for War Rocket Ajax, you'll find the show. Leave us a review on iTunes, if you will. A 5-star review. The more positive reviews we get on iTunes, the better. We are now on Google Play as well. We got a request from several listeners about getting War Rocket Ajax up on Google Play. And because you asked, we have granted your wish. War Rocket Ajax is now available on Google Play, as is Movie Fighters. Now we've reached the part of the show where we tell you all the different places you can find us on the internet. For me, all you have to do is go to about.me/MattDWilson. You'll find links to my Twitter, my Tumblr, and my books on Amazon. You can also go to Comixology and find my comic with artist Kevin Warren, Copernicus Jones, Robot Detective. Chris, where can people find your stuff?
People can find my stuff at about.me/ChrisSims. That'll have links to my Twitter and Tumblr, which are both at TheISB, on Twitter and Tumblr, respectively. You can also find my comics on Comixology or at your local store. X-Men 92 number 1 through 5 are out currently. Number 5 is the Cyclops and Jean sort of one-shot solo issue with a last page that's got everybody talking. Number 6 will be out soon, and that kicks off the new story arc called Lilapalooza, which features the Toadies and the Flaming Lips and Death's Head. The comic you've always wanted to read. Definitely check those out. It would be really cool if you did. Other than that, you can find me in Durham. If you see me at Costco, say hi.
I'm sure somebody will. I'm sure you'll get some highs. This has been this episode of War Rocket Ajax, episode number 317. We answered your listener questions. We'll be back next week with another episode.
Have a great week, everybody.
Yeah! Flash. Hey, Flash! From this day on.
Do you hear the cat?
I do hear the cat. A lot of hairs enough in this.